We want our piece of the pie, right here, right now. We want our piece of the pie, right here, right now. We want our piece of the pie, right here, right now. We want our piece of the pie, right here.
Jamaica's Jimmy Cliff with Piece of the Pie. It's from his 1983 album, The Power and the Glory. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. Well, school districts across the country are humming with activity now that there's this new school year, but not so in Detroit, where the state's largest school district, still under state-imposed emergency management, remains mired in a series of overlapping crises, fiscal, political, administrative, and even pedagogical, that appear certain to something, that appear certain to doom any hopes for a productive year. Elena Herrada, an elected member of the old school board, whose authority over local education was overridden by the state, is here with us today to explain the dire situation with education in her hometown. Detroit, as you know, is in its third year of servicing a $20 billion debt under the strict terms imposed by a federal court. Those terms have caused an evisceration of budgets for essential services and practically a bargain basement giveaway of its land and municipal assets to the politically well-connected. Elena, great to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Well, why is going back to school in Detroit something of an interesting and unique phenomenon?
Well, mainly just to make it very clear right from the beginning, there is a completely different set of schools and school realities for black people in Michigan than there are for white people. And that's the most most clear way of understanding what we're talking about. Detroit is a city that's about 85% African-American and perhaps about 10% Latino, depending on who you ask and when. But it's a majority black city, and every city under emergency management, which is called Public Act 436 right now, is black. And cities that have been in similar financial crisis have not been put under PA 436 if they're not black. There's currently a group of school districts that have joined together to fight emergency management, but they were given the option to not be under emergency management despite their clear qualification under the criteria laid out by Governor Snyder. And Detroit did not meet the criteria because we were not broke and we were put under emergency management. So it's completely racialized, first of all, to understand it very, very clearly. It's completely racialized. And we have been left out of our voting rights and now of our educational potential by the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and particularly what's left of the labor movement here in Michigan, which was once the home of the UAW, the birthplace of the UAW. So everyone is afraid. And the people who should be standing up, like the State Board of Education, would have been able to sue the governor for doing what they did to Detroit schools and to all the black districts, but they did not sue. They did nothing. So everyone is really afraid. This is really where you see elected officials across the board really being cowards. And we're not really, we can't really see what would happen if people stood up, because they haven't yet. Just the Detroit School Board has stood up. And for that, we were removed from office, and a new district was created, leaving the old district with the debt, and the new district with basically the oversight of the Financial Review Commission, which is appointed by Governor Snyder, which basically represents bankers and bondholders. So the people in Detroit have no say whatsoever over their curriculum, over the expenditures of the schools, and we were forced into a 18% loan to take us out of the debt that the state put us in. And Judge Rhodes, who's the federal judge over all of this, who was also the judge over the bankruptcy, has refused to allow us to get an audit. So we can't even say where $3 billion in bond money has gone in these last 7 years. They spent the money, and now they want to just start all over again with a new district that has no debt. And that's what has happened. So I'll take questions from that point if anybody has any.
Hello.
I'm asking, in the city of Detroit, what does back to school mean then? If are the schools actually going to be open? Are teachers actually going to be there? Are students actually going to be going into a building called a school and getting something called an education? Oh, we seem to have lost her for a minute. Okay, we'll try and getting her back. Here's the thing. It's important to understand, and I've been saying for a while, because we've been covering Detroit now for a couple of years, that this is very important to understand. This is the template for what will be happening very soon all throughout the United States. It never, ever would have been in the mind of a Detroiter, say 10 years ago or so, that this would actually come to pass. But it actually has come to pass. It's happening. And so you have, Elena, I'm glad you're back with us.
The question is,
in this state, the people like you, elected people, to the board of to an education board, no longer have any power. So you can't determine anything having to do with education. The state is now in charge. It has imposed itself on the local school district. It actually has. It's created its own district, as a matter of fact. So when
right, and it's created its own courts for if anybody has any complaints about that district. It removed courts. Jurisdiction and created commissions.
So when people say we're going back to school, what exactly does that mean in Detroit? Are there schools? Are there people going to these schools? Are there teachers in those schools? Will children be learning in those schools? What's going on?
One of the things that the legislation allows for, and not one Detroit legislator voted for this legislation, nor were they allowed to speak during the legislation. They were not allowed to speak as if they were not there. They were silenced. The Detroit delegation was completely silenced and not allowed to speak. And I will put these links up on my Facebook for anybody who has more questions about this. Detroit legislators did not decide anything that happened to do with Detroit education. And they also passed a law that allows for Detroit only to have non-certified teachers.
Wow. And I suppose there is also, as you began, this also there is a correlation there with this kind of legislative action and race.
But everybody's black here. I mean, the majority of the students are black. There's some Latino students, but the majority are black. And now our children who have been put at the very bottom academically because of state control and because of constant rotating of contractors, we have constantly new curriculum because whoever is the contractor of choice comes in and sells the curriculum to. Remember that we don't get to see, we don't hire the superintendent, we don't decide upon curriculum, so we hear about it from teachers that there's a new curriculum that they introduced. Marzano was last year, $60 million. This year, there's something new. These are the kinds of things that they're doing, and our children are constantly being destabilized. Now they're going to be subjected to uncertified teachers.
Is there any kind of federal recourse? Okay, so the state is declared war on Detroit education.
Yeah,
that's clear.
Yeah, the elected school board.
The state has declared war on education. Uh-huh. You're not getting a hearing, and you can't expect to get a hearing from the way the state has been acting, the actions it has taken. Right. You're not expecting to get a sympathetic hearing in the form of an appeal of any sort to rectify the situation. Right. Is there any hope of going to the federal level with this?
Well, we went last month to Cincinnati to Sixth District Court. And we had filed a lawsuit along with several other plaintiffs, the pensioners as well, about the racism of the emergency manager law, which Judge Rhodes, when he was over the bankruptcy, told us we could not go into court. We would be deferred until the bankruptcy was over. And before we could get back into court, Judge Rhodes himself became the emergency manager over Detroit Public Schools. So he's the one who kept us from court and then became the next emergency manager. So this was the lawsuit that we were challenging the emergency manager right to exist because it's only in black cities. And Judge Rhodes not only kept us from going to court, but then became the next emergency manager. So it's a raging conflict of interest. So we went into circuit court where our attorneys represented us, and we probably will lose there, and we hope that the U.S. Supreme Court will hear our case.
This is incredible. In the meantime, how many school children are affected by this?
They say there's about 45,000, but they actually really don't know, and they don't talk about the 15 schools that we just built with our bond money that they took out of Detroit Public Schools and created the Educational Achievement Authority, which was reported in even Detroit's media yesterday that every one of those children have failed. Every one of those children have failed all of the standard tests. And the first graduating class out of the EAA, students are getting 10s and 11s on the ACTs and being told to sign up for the military. No one was accepted into college out of the EAA. And that's a system that Snyder created with the help of Duggan, the mayor of Detroit, the white mayor of Detroit, who was a write-in mayor. With his help, they created a separate and unequal school district called the Educational Achievement Authority with 15 schools that we have to pay for. They're brand new schools. They took them out and created a completely separate school district for what they said was the lowest 5%, and then they proceeded to fail them further. And the children
I was reading about it in the Detroit Free Press, the report about the horrific rate of performance of these students in the Education Achievement Authority, this parallel track that they have created to just pack these kids. But in the meantime, they're also continuing to shut down regular public schools.
They fail children, and then they shut down the schools because the children are failing. That's what they're doing here. The only saving grace of that is the law firms that are making so much money off of this have stepped in and said, oh, you can't close those schools yet. So the law firms, their own law firms, are stepping in and saying, wait, don't close them yet, because they are clearly the goose that lays the golden egg. So the law firms that represent the district against us are telling the governor, wait, not yet.
And Miller in Collins, the meantime,
Miller Canfield.
Pardon? In the meantime as well, I understand that there is practically a mushrooming of charter schools. So schools are being shut down, but yet other schools are mushrooming and showing up. How is this happening?
Well, because they allowed charters to come in. And one charter school that unionized, one of the more wealthy charter schools that unionized, just closed down, leaving the seniors nowhere to come into school when they're going to be seniors this year. They closed their school because the teachers signed up for the union.
Does it boggle your mind, as it does mine, that this is happening? This is not a closed kind of secret anywhere. I mean, this is happening in the open. The Secretary of Education appears not to be involved. The state has declared open warfare, and it's clearly race-based, on the city of Detroit and its children. And it is shutting down schools. And we have, with the bankruptcy, the continuing handing over of these buildings to the real estate world. And we have all the goodies that they got from the bankruptcy, the terms of bankruptcy, all these assets that are being transferred. We have new people coming in. This is a part of the new crop of desirable residents that the governor had imagined or reimagined the city would look like, with a new set of people. It is mind-boggling that this is happening blatantly in the open, and we don't hear a peep. We don't hear anything about that seems to suggest that there is a serious emergency occurring in Detroit. Our education-minded president has yet to talk about Detroit and what's going on education-wise. Why is this happening?
Mainly it's happening on behalf of contractors, because this is where the money is, and you can do it to the people who are the most vulnerable. So while all this development is going on, while our local government has been removed under the consent agreement, we don't have any local government in place here. That's why Illich was able to get a new stadium built with taxpayer money, with free land. We're supposed to be broke, and they gave him land. They gave him the land, and we're building it. 60% of the new hockey arena for Illich is being built with taxpayer money. This is because billionaires are in charge. We have no government here. We have just corporations doing what they want.
So what is the nature then of what do you expect then the response of the courts to be? I mean, and you all of your chips are in that basket now.
No, our chips are not. I mean, some people feel like it's necessary to go to court. We're never going to win in court. And the few times that we have won in court, they change the law immediately. We won on academic control, and they changed the law immediately. So they went from Public Act 10 to Public Act 72. They go from Public Act 72 to Public Act 4. We repeal Public Act 4, and they gave us Public Act 436. As long as it's only being done by two majority black cities, it's not going to matter. So it's going to have to take place outside of the courtroom. It's going to have to happen in the streets, and that's probably what's going to come eventually. But it's really hard because the pastors are in on it. Everybody who's supposed to be leading is really in on it. So there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of confusion about it.
Could you touch on this phrase that you have talked about several times, not just today, but in previous conversations we've had, about the predominantly black districts of Michigan, towns and cities, small cities, that are all under emergency management. Do you think that that's because, in fact, as the claim is, that they were incapable of governing themselves? They don't seem to know how to do that. And
no,
the state
has to
step in to do it.
Yeah, I know that that certainly is the narrative. The areas where, and there's a lot, actually, even the Michigan Municipal League wrote about this, the revenue sharing was not given to these cities, including Flint. The revenue sharing that we were supposed to get from the state for our particular resources that are revenue creators, water, lighting, all of these things, when the state took them over, they were supposed to give back money and revenue because we don't have a tax base. They took away the tax base when they took away the residency requirement for the majority of the jobs here. So police don't have to live here anymore. City employees don't have to live here anymore. So the people just come. It's a completely colonized territory. There's white people taking over all the jobs that used to be done by black people. And this is happening in a lot of the spheres as well. It's happening in the local universities and colleges as well as a local government. So there's things called the community benefits agreement that they're trying to cobble together some justice for the people who live here, but it's just trickery. Nothing is coming to the majority of the people who have been here for generations, and they're losing their homes in foreclosure and water shutoffs and everything else. So no, it's not that people cannot handle their business here. It's that people are being taken over and robbed by bankers in Michigan. My water bill came in last month at $950. It was for 2 months, $950. So I have to contest it, of course, and say what's wrong here. But in the meantime, they're shutting off homes. People are getting foreclosed on. And so much of the school money was based on the taxes. So if you're talking about 2,000 shutoffs a week of water, those are homes that will most likely go into foreclosure. And the tax base is based on that. That's how we derive our income. So as long as they're putting people out, what they're
doing? Oh, we're having a little.
They're putting them into these terrible schools. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, but we were having a little spottiness in the quality of sound,
okay.
But it's fine.
It's really ethnic cleansing. This is what it is. It's ethnic cleansing. It's taking black people and separating them into the worst spaces, shutting off their water. And I want to call your attention. I'm sure you probably have seen the We the People's Mapping the Water Crisis report. If you haven't seen it, I really urge your listeners to look up Mapping the Water Crisis, and it gives the actual data of how the shutoffs have been directed at black people in Detroit. People with higher water bills are not getting shut off. That's the same thing that they did to us with the school takeovers. So Inkster, Black City, Romulus, Benton Harbor, Buena Vista schools, all of those districts have closed. And the students have to go to schools in the neighboring districts where they are not welcome and where their parents have absolutely no say in the curriculum or in the way their children will be treated. We see pictures of the students from Buena Vista standing outside in the wintertime doing some sort of penalty. Black children are treated very differently in these places where they're being forced to go to school, but those districts get the money per head for those students. But the students get treated like stepchildren because their own districts have been shut down by the state. It's completely criminal, and it could not be allowed. It wouldn't be allowed unless they were all black. That's the only reason that it happens.
Well, Elena, I know you and a band of fearless activists continue to fight the good fight, and I could only wish and hope that you prevail in your resistance to this, because so much is at stake. And it is important for people to know that there is a, I mean, there's a war going on. There's a war, and it has been designed, and it every step of what is going on in Detroit has been meticulously planned. The outcomes are expected, and it is being done in a manner that will be replicated all across the country. And it is important to know and to be thankful for the fact that there is still resistance. And I thank you, Elena, for hanging in there. You and your stalwart companions still fighting the good fight. We will talk some more about this another time, but I just am thankful that you had the time today to just squeeze us in to give us a fast update on what is going on to the back-to-school experience in Detroit.
Well, thank you so much. And when I next visit, I hope we can talk about Judge Rose going to Puerto Rico and Detroit to do the same thing to Puerto Rico that he did to us.
Yes, because he has been named the big overseer of the bankruptcy of Puerto Rico as well. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We'll talk again
right.
soon.
Okay, all right.
Thanks. You know, it's almost so mind-boggling as to be almost unreal. You can't imagine people, this is happening in the United States of America, where people are talking about all these great ideals and whatnot, and you have trench warfare against children in the city of Detroit. This is what they're doing every day. This is what they have to live with every single day. We'll take this break and come back and talk about Brother Bernie right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, you recall that Bernie Sanders stunned the political world, and especially 13 million voters who had supported his presidential bid in the primaries, when on July the 12th, 2 weeks prior to the Democratic National Convention, he ended his, quote, independent, unquote, campaign, and in the name of party unity, instead declared unqualified support for Hillary Clinton for president. Well, a lot has happened since then, in that short time. You know, federal probes, email issues, Clinton Foundation pay-to-play lawlessness, resurfacing of Clinton history, both Bill's and Hill's, a history of ethical challenges, and now a growing chorus of media, heavy media people, saying, get out of the foundation business and shut it down. And still more probes. All these things, I think, should cause Bernie to rethink his political decision, don't you think? But there's no indication from Bernie Sanders that he's troubled about Hillary, troubled to the extent that he needs to say something. Because, of course, Bernie Sanders entered this race with all these high ideals. The business of moving away from business as usual politics, moving away from the control of the corporate world over our everyday lives. All kinds of objections Bernie had. And these are the very objections that surround, these are the very issues that surround the candidate, he enthusiastically embraced and has urged his followers to endorse and support. Does he not have an obligation now to say something? Well, of course, even as I speak, I know that Bernie is putting the finishing touches on his book, which will be coming out the week after the election. You know, you see these things and you can't help but say, my God, for shame, for shame. Don't do these things. The book is going to cost $27, hearkening back to the average donation he got, he said, from the people. $27 that funded his campaign and put him in orbit, political orbit, and gave him a very good fighting chance at carving a different path in the world of U.S. politics, giving people a different choice. He has purchased a summer home on the lake, on a lake in Vermont, where it is presumed, of course, he's entitled to rest up and enjoy life and the fruits of his labor as an elected official from the state of Vermont. But we still have this unfinished business. I talked about this, and I said it is imperative. As this was right after Bernie announced that he was going to not only support Hillary Clinton, but he was going to ask everybody on the planet in a position to vote for her to do so. He lifted her up. He extolled her virtues. He put the stamp of the good housekeeping stamp of approval. She meets with his standards. And we can trust that Bernie Sanders, this high-minded idealist, a socialist, a kind of sort of Democrat, but mostly a socialist, okay, that what informed his decision and his appeal was the people's interests. And when he did that, when he capitulated the way he did without asking the 13 million voters what they think he ought to do, he began the down that slippery slope of, hey, this is my movement, personal movement. This is my personal thing. I could do whatever I want to do. And I say that you ought to vote for Hillary. And I say I am going to vote for Hillary. And I say she's the best thing since sliced bread. So believe that as you have believed me before. Okay. Now, what did I say? The first order of business of this movement and whatever was left trying to regather themselves together in the aftermath of this devastating act of betrayal, the first order of business was to cancel his contract. Cancel it. Fire the leader. Make sure the world understands he did not act like the leader of a movement. He acted like a regular politician. This is my stuff. I got here by myself. These are my thoughts, my ideas, my energy, and my talent that brought me here. Oh, yes, I thank you. I thank you. I thank you for voting and whatnot. But in the end, it's about me. I am in a position that I've wanted to be. I would have preferred to have been the candidate. But I don't have the guts to go any further. So I'm stopping right here. I don't need your permission. I don't really, it doesn't matter to me much whether you agree or disagree. You will have to respect my decision and blah, 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 blah. Okay. Did I not tell you this is important to do? Whoever is remaining after the devastation at the Democratic National Convention, witnessing their leader prostrate himself and trade off all the things that they had struggled for and all the successes that they had. There have been remarkable successes with Bernie Sanders' campaign. And the right thing to do was, even if he wanted to do something else, the right thing to have done would have been to consult with your movement. That is, if you recognize you have one, and therefore the relationship has to do with accountability. You ask the people, we've come this far. This is what the scenario looks like. What do you think should be our next move? He didn't bother to do that. There was no referendum. There was no vote. There was no consultation by with 13 million people as to what he ought to do. He said, I'm going to go with Hillary. Okay. They did not cancel his contract then. They did not do what I suggested they do. And these are lessons learned from the previous traitors who had done the same thing and who have come to pretty much the same end. They are no longer relevant. They're no longer relevant. They have no power in the world of politics right now. Only symbolic, and that is even if people want to do that. They have been consigned to the dustbin of political history. But the movement, and this is important work for the movement's people to do. Immediately after Sanders did that, you hold a news conference, you talk among yourselves. And if you are of the mind that this movement should continue, it cannot die because Bernie Sanders decides to kill it. It is not his property. He is not the owner of this movement. So you hold some kind of a talk among yourselves, and you have a public news conference announcing that you're firing the leader, since the leader has fired you. You're firing him. That was an act of political treachery. And you don't forgive that, because in the end, it hurts you more than anybody else. Even if you wanted to go on with the Bernie Sanders movement, and he's still pretending that this is what he intends to do, you know, after his book comes out and he make the grand tour and discuss the book and the vision that's in the book. And he'll charge some speaking fees based on his talks about the vision that's in the book. But if people were really dedicated to this idea, and if they truly are offended by Bernie Sanders' act of betrayal, they would have called a news conference a long time ago, almost immediately, as soon as after this act of treachery. The sooner you could do it right after that, you should do it. Cancel his contract. He is no longer entitled to represent himself as the agent of any movement. Let him go create his own, anew. You are the owners of a movement. You continue with it. But you let the world know your leader has failed your expectations. And here's the proof. He's telling us that Hillary Clinton is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Hillary Clinton! And now we see we've been discussing the Clinton Foundation. We see the kind of havoc this entity has caused and created, all in the name of making a lot of money. But the damage done, and I want to address specifically those leaders of the African American community who, in this sense, have much in common with Bernie Sanders as acolytes of the Democratic Party, the servants of the Democratic Party, who have there's no evidence that they have stood up to the party leadership and said, hey, there's no way we endorse this. We've got to open up the field a bit. We have to entertain more bidders. But in as much as you're siding with Hillary, you have to also assume responsibility for that decision, because that's what you said is your standard. There's more to come. There's much more to come about the Clintons, but I wanted to drive home the point in these series that we've been doing here that a lot of the damage, and I mean serious damage done, was done in the black world and to black people, people of color in and around the universe. That's where they went to defecate. That's where they did their nasty stuff. So when people like these stalwart black leaders stand up and talk about what a great candidate she is, they are suffering from a prime case of selective amnesia, or they're just totally ignorant. Or they have no concept whatsoever, not even a remnant of the consciousness that Garvey, and we talked about Garvey, had instilled all over the world of a consciousness, so that when you harm people in Malawi, you harm people in Harlem. The reason I talk about Detroit is Harlem. Detroit is Baltimore, because that's the plan. When you harm people in Haiti, and we've discussed that, 10,000 people killed by cholera, 800,000 people infected. And this is while she was Secretary of State. And did nothing but secure the mining rights for gold for her brother. And Bill still has to account for $10 billion in reconstruction aid that flowed through Haiti. Went there to personally install her choice of president. A guy who used to perform showing his naked butt to an audience. That's who she said should rule Haiti. That's the standard. So in as much as that's your standard, Mr. Sanders, people should register that they do not agree. And here are the new reasons they don't agree with your standard. They don't agree. And this is how politics should be done. I mean, I'm not setting the law or anything, but it seems logical to me. When your leader betrays you, usurps the investment you make, underperforms, and then comes behind you to undermine the very thing that you have worked so hard to build, you've got to publicly separate yourself and cancel his portfolio, because he will forever be known as the leader of this movement. Which is why Jesse Jackson and Sharpton and others like that continue to run around as ambassadors with portfolio. Well, exactly who are you representing?
Oh, I'm with the National Rainbow Coalition.
Oh, yeah? Can I see the minutes of your last meeting? It doesn't exist. Except as to provide a ruse to be useful to their masters. They call upon them, you know, there's a big conflagration in Ferguson. We need you to go to Ferguson and chill out your people. And of course, when we know what happened there, they chased Jesse Jackson, they chased Al Sharpton out of there. That was their way of saying, we don't recognize your leadership here. You've already demonstrated the integrity of your leadership. You're beneath our standard. So, this is still unfinished business that the movement that allegedly was headed by Sanders until he killed it himself, they still have to do this. Because it still is on record. And this is why Hillary Clinton continues to assume that even if she gets half of those 13 million, it's all right. It's a nice number that she didn't have to spend money to go get. She didn't have to organize a thing to go get them. She didn't have to go knocking on doors, making speeches, making phone calls. She had no exercise at all to perform to get this batch, this millions of extra votes. She just got them. What will Sanders get? Well, supposedly, he will get a higher profile when he returns to the U.S. Senate. He will lead a nicer, gentler life. He will still ostensibly be committed to his ideals. Well, that's good. But as Martin Luther King said, it's not about what you say. We want to cash the check. We want to make sure that those ideals that you articulated, we want to see them in action. We want to see you committed, fully committed to them. And that's the work that has to be done. Until they do that, until somebody summons up the courage to terminate Bernie Sanders' affiliation with this movement, they should consider that their movement still is compromised. They must fire the leader. Because make no mistake, it's going to soon come to a point where Hillary is going to call in her chips. She's going to want all these politicians standing with her because, of course, this vast right-wing conspiracy is out to get her and her husband, and they are clean people. So they're going to call up their reinforcements. And they're going to say, hey, you got to stand by me now. I need you. Are we expecting to see Mr. Sanders' face there among them? He should be compelled to say something. He should be compelled to account for his judgment. How is it possible that with these revelations, and there are more to come, and I'm telling you, because I know what's in the works, it's huge, big time. And anyone who has supported Hillary Clinton is also going to have to account for what was the premise, what was the rationale for putting on the line 13 million hard-won votes and even the possibility. See, this is also part of it, and you have to revisit these issues because it was so clear that the election in many states was rigged. It is quite possible that Bernie Sanders himself might have won. But what made him do that turnaround? And we still shouldn't be finished with Bernie. We have to call him to account and say, well, okay, now what is your position? What is your position now? You talk about emails? Look what's happened with the emails. You're not interested in talking about those damned emails, he said. Well, okay. It means you have poor judgment. It wouldn't be bad if it was just you. But you were speaking for 13 million people. Do you consider your obligation to them and the integrity of that movement still to be important or no longer relevant? And for those in the movement, do you consider your movement so important that you have to safeguard its integrity by calling into account the person who not only headed it, quote unquote, but also usurped it, took it, and put it in the hands of a person most undeserving? He has to account for that. Let's see if they have the courage to do that. Because if they do that, they instantly restore credibility to their movement. This is a movement with standards. This is a movement that people can trust. This is a movement of people with sound mind. And they truly are in sync with the high ideals that they articulate all the time. But, as I said, we ain't hearing nothing from Brother Bernie. Thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, you want to stay tuned. It's a great program, the NDC Savings Club. See, we cover the bases here at PRN. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. Until tomorrow, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye. This life has a living to offer to every single one. Birds and beasts, flowers and trees, there is no exception. Hey, we want to be piece of the pie. Hey, right now, right here. We want to be piece of the pie.